But up first on the program, he's one of the most prolific and successful songwriters in music history. He's the only artist ever to receive Grammy Awards for music, lyrics, and orchestration. And his songs make up, the more modern Great American Songbook. Classics like MacArthur Park, Wichita Lineman, Up, Up and Away, Galveston, By the Time I Get to Phoenix. He's a member of the Songwriters Hall of Fame and the Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame as well. And he's headed back out on tour, including a visit to Maine at Jonathan's in a Gunquit next Friday night. We're happy to welcome back to Downtown our friend Jimmy Webb.
Hello, Rich.
Hey, Jimmy, how are you today?
I'm really good. It's beautiful here on the North Shore of Long Island. It's a sunny day with blue skies and no reason not to be optimistic.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, optimistic when you're going back out on the road. What's it feel like to get ready to be out there performing in front of human beings again?
A little shaky, a little bit. One of my sayings is that, you know, if the performer doesn't have a little stage fright, then the audience isn't getting their money's worth. But I guess I'm a little nervous about it, but getting in the groove. I've played a couple of gigs now, and I found out, you know, it's still there. You know, after 2 years, you know, when I reach for it, I've still got the chops, and so I'm going to get into it. You know, I don't know how many more years I'll be able to do it, but I'm, you know, people still come out. You know, most of the time I'm at capacity and enjoying myself. You know, I don't like airports much. I'm sort of like turning into Willie Nelson. I think I'm going to get a bus, but I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we're looking forward to having you up here in Maine at Jonathan's in a Gunquit on Friday, April 1st. You'll be throughout the Northeast. And then, very exciting, too, you've got a tour of the UK coming up as well.
I always look forward to that. I have some good friends all over the UK. You know, London's like a second city to me. I was there quite a bit when I was, just out of my teens, really. I was a kid, and it made a stunning impression on me that I never quite got over. You know, it's there's also Edinburgh and the whole of Scotland and that wonderful, you know, vibe up there. You know, I had. One time when I was playing the Green Room in London, I had five guys from Scotland drive down, and they claimed they stopped at every pub between Scotland and the Green Room. And I knew those guys for years. They used to come to my club. They'd used to come to the shows, and they'd say, "Hi, I'm one of the guys who drove down from Scotland to see your show." I have good friends over there. I love Dublin. I'm 61% Irish, according to my DNA, which, you know, I love Irish music. I love Irish culture. The opportunity to play for them. There's such a race of artistic people, and it's a special opportunity to get to go to Ireland. So all of that, and I think Copenhagen as well. You know, so I'm beginning to make new friendships in the Norse countries.
We're talking with Jimmy Webb here on Downtown. Well, one of the great things about seeing you live is that you not only hear the wonderful music, but you get the stories behind it too. And when you were up here a couple of years back, it was such a wonderful time. It was such a comfortable experience. The audience felt like we were in your living room listening to you play and tell stories. Do you have a set list when you do your live shows, or do you just go with what feels right at any given time?
I always have a set list, but my policy is to ignore it whenever possible. You know, probably 15, 20 years ago, I started getting a lot of requests for stories. You know, I was playing pretty much straight music and maybe a couple of little, you know, references to people who had recorded the song, or, you know, just trivia, really. And I started telling some stories about my father, the Baptist preacher, Coon Marine, and what it was like to grow up with him, which was pretty hair-raising. People began to say, you know, we like the show, but could you tell more stories? After a while, it got to be a kind of I hate to say this, but it became something that other people copied. There were some really well-known cabaret artists certain people who actually came in and sat down and watched what I was doing and wrote it down. I can remember sitting up on stage and watching them write it down, and I thought, well, this is not complicated, guys. I'm just playing songs and telling tales, you know? And pretty soon, it coalesced into a kind of production that I'm comfortable with, because I really need to be comfortable on stage. I'm a nervous type. I don't want anything to go wrong. At some point in my performing career, I began to realize that when something goes wrong, that's a great opportunity to make the audience laugh, you know, to sort of bend it like Beckham, you know, make the show do what you want to do, which is to entertain. And the more comfortable I got with it, the more comfortable the audiences got with it. I think it's kind of become a trademark. People know it's going to be an easy evening, and they know there's going to be some laughter. There's going to be probably one or two tears as well. But hopefully my goal is to take people away from the pressure of this 21st century life and this, you know, the torrent of bad news that just seems to overwhelm us from time to time. And I think that I like to provide at least an evening where, you know, we just enjoy each other, and we enjoy music, the universal language, which has helped me through so many, you know, really bad moments in my life. The music of other people has helped me. I'm just like my audiences. I look for solace in music. And so, you know, it's become a little bit of a therapeutic session, I guess, you know. I certainly like to leave people feeling better if I can.
Well, you certainly do that. Now, speaking of telling stories, your memoir, The Cake and the Rain, was so terrific, but it stopped pretty young in your life. Will there be a sequel at some point?
Well, I'd love to do it, and I have a publisher who's very interested in it, and as you say, you know, it really stopped abruptly. let's be honest. I mean, it was like falling off a cliff. But you know, there was kind of a reason for that as well. That was a nexus. That was a turning point in my life where I really had to reevaluate what I was doing with my life, because I came so near to losing the ability to play the piano. So I deliberately stopped it there, and then, you know, I found a way to continue my life, and I would like to continue that story. I have lots and lots of hilarious things that happened. The fact that I moved east, I mean, as a Californian, that I would move my family to New York in the worst blizzard of the decade, you know, and completely change my life is a fish out of water story that you wouldn't believe. I mean, you know, the the differences between living in California and living in New York make for some pretty funny material. But I did come back here. I've spent like 35 years here now. I think it was a good decision, even though I think a lot of people thought I was crazy. Most people want to move to California, not the other way around.
I was listening the other night because the 40th anniversary of the release of Angel Heart is coming up next month, and I was listening to that again, and it's such a wonderful album. I think some of your very best songs on there.
Hey, I thank you very much for that. You know, I was backed up by Toto, Steve Lukather, Jeffrey Beccaro, David Paich, et al. You know, you couldn't ask for a greater band. I mean, just to have that band just say, we'll come in and play. We'll, you know, you'll basically be in Toto. You know, this will be an experience. You know, it was like an experience, really, cutting an album with them. And I'm still knocked out whenever I hear Stephen Lukather. I recognize his style immediately. I know his playing so well. And, you know, it was right on the cusp. It was almost as I was moving to New York, that album came out. And, I thought it really deserved to do better than it did. But, you know, I have no sour grapes over it. I go back and I look at the things I did, and my philosophy now is I create music, I record, I go straight ahead. Sometimes I work with other people, and I don't pay any attention to the commercial side of it. To me, that's just distraction, and it's not going to help me to create another album. It's just better to keep keep my mind on my purpose, which is to create music. So that's what I do. I try not to grieve too much over these albums that didn't sell. But occasionally, you know, they come up. I produced an album for the Supremes. Critics thought it was great, you know, didn't sell. I produced an album for Cher that was a disappointment. I mean, you know, you can't, sometimes it's, you know, on the other hand, you run across something like Highwaymen, and you've got Willie Nelson, Kris Kristofferson, Johnny Cash, and Waylon Jennings all recording the same song. It turns into an album called The Highwaymen. It turns into a name for the group. The group calls themselves The Highwaymen, and it becomes a kind of legend in its own, you know, right. A song that was turned down by Capitol Records for Glenn Campbell, which, by the way, caused Glenn to walk out of Capitol Records and never went back. So there's quite a history around that song. Originally written for an album I was doing with George Martin called El Mirage. And so, you know, it's the good with the bad and the ugly sometimes. You know, you just, if you're around as long as I am, and I'm 75, but when it comes to music, I don't think of myself as an old man. I think of myself as 30 years old and ready to sing and ready to play the piano and not having lost much. So I'm still in the game. I've got some new songs. I'm ready to cut another album. And I'm looking forward to this tour, and I'm looking forward to Maine. I go to Maine every summer.
Right.
Take my kids up there. So
yeah, your neighbors with our owner here, Stephen King, right?
Well, we occasionally cross paths in the Center Level Market.
Hey, Jimmy, I have to ask you too, how is Josephine doing?
God bless you for bringing Josephine. She is the light, and she's the light of my life. She's 5 going on 6 going on 35. she plays the piano. She's a thespian, she's a ballet dancer, she's a comedian, she's a teacher, I had forgotten that childhood is full of roles. It's full of role playing, of being different things, and it's a wondrous thing to see, because as you get older, you tend to get in a groove and you only do one thing and you try to do it well. But when you're 6 years old, you're doing everything. She's going to be an astronaut. She knows about women's rights. She's pretty smart. And, the first time I ever saw her, she had a head of black hair and these, like, kind of bluer than blue eyes, you know, almost purple eyes. And I said, that looks like a baby picture of Elizabeth Taylor. And she's turned into, you know, I hate to brag like this, and I don't want to put too much emphasis on this either, but she is rather beautiful, I must say.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, we wish you great luck out on the tour. By the way, send along from us, please, a happy belated birthday to your wife, Laura, as well.
Okay. Well, I will do that. Laura is right now in Florida roller skating. She bought a pair of roller skates and went to Florida. I don't know whether that's a bad sign or not, but hopefully she comes back, you know.
Well, Jimmy, it's always good to talk with you. Thank you for making time for us. Have a wonderful time out on the road, and we look forward to seeing you soon.
Listen, I'm in your debt. You know, thank you for helping me promote my concerts, and it doesn't go unnoticed. I appreciate it very much.
We're always happy to talk with you. Thanks again, Jimmy.
All right, bye-bye.